The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Michael Shaul is our next guest. He's chairman and CEO of Market Field Asset Management, and he's calling this morning's jobs report a solid set of data which should go a long way to correct unnecessary angst from the March report. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, the market certainly seems to agree with you. The Dow above 15,000 now, 15,005, up 1.2%. Is 165,000 jobs really enough to be kickstarting a new leg to the bull market?
Well, as I say, I think what was perhaps more important in today's report was the big revisions made to February and March. Now, February was always, I mean, from day one, February was a strong report. It became a very strong report in the first revision. Now it's an extremely strong report with more than 300,000 jobs being created in February. And March's number, you know, which was disappointing and sort of brought up all of this, you know, sort of unnecessary commentary about the sequester and the fiscal cliff and, you know, perhaps a slowdown in 2013, you know, suddenly has gone from mediocre data to, you know, basically inline data. You know, the sort of, we've been averaging about 160,000, 170,000 jobs a month for most of the last 2 years. And, you know, I think that really, you know, I think that really matters because, you know, I think people have been expecting in general a slowdown in spring data because it's something we've seen over the last 3 years. You know, and as a result, just inline data being produced, which has really been the story of the last couple of weeks. So, you know, I think really makes people look at this economy and understand that they're going to have to ratchet their expectations a little bit higher. And you see the response in the market today.
Well, and of course, it's partly just, I think, the way the human brain works. You know, you kind of focus on the latest piece of information
Sure.
that becomes your reality there. But I don't think we should dismiss some of the softness we've seen in manufacturing indicators. And it's not that they've gotten horrible, but some of the regional manufacturing surveys from the Fed, you know, you can understand that there has been this question mark. What's interesting to me looking at this report, and I know you're an investor, not an economist, but it is important for investors now to read the clues. We look at new claims for unemployment benefits, which are now at 324,000 in the latest week. And if we know if they stay below 350 and around that level, they are signaling that the labor market should be, you know, be in a much healthier mode.
Absolutely.
This report seems much more in line, these payrolls numbers with all these revisions, with what we've seen in claims.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we've been saying for weeks that claims are what you need to follow. Historically, the claims data has been a much better guide to where the economy is than the payroll data. The monthly payroll data is extremely volatile and is known to give false signals. I mean, it's at least fair data because it gives false signals in both directions. But the claims data tends to be much more accurate. And what was really significant about this week's data is that it comes at a time in which the seasonal adjustment is very adverse. And, you know, in other words, this is typically a time in the year in which you would expect good non-seasonally adjusted claims data. And instead, we got great non-seasonally adjusted claims data. You had the lowest number of non-seasonally adjusted claims since the summer of 2007. And I don't think that data was a fluke. You know, maybe you'll go up a little bit next week and then down again. But the trend in initial claims has been very, very solid. And it's been solid at a time of year that the seasonal adjustments make it very, very difficult to produce good headline data. And I think people need to take it seriously.
Well, Michael, is it onward and upward then for equity markets?
I hope so. I think if the S&P can leave 1600 behind, you know, we're off to a good start. I don't think it would be crazy to see the S&P at 1700 by the end of this quarter. You know,
by the end of the quarter?
Well, I think if it happens, it'll happen quickly. This is not a market which is going to grind higher. It's a market that, if it catches a bid, I think will rip to the upside. And I think if that happened, unlike the move from 1500 to 1600, which was really led essentially by defensive, fairly uninteresting sectors to us, I think this would be a much more pro-cyclical rally. I think there is a chance that you see a re-rating of the strength of this recovery over the next 30 to 60 days. And there's a lot of really attractive groups which have really lagged on a year-to-date basis that would have the ability to catch up. So you may get a period of time in which the more defensive, sort of dividend, yield-friendly names sort of kind of go sideways. I don't think they'd go down, but that some of the much more cyclical, pro-economic stuff really, you know, really catches a bit.
Well, let's follow that path because I'm sure everyone out there who's listening to the show today is saying, okay, come on, what's going to be hot? What's juicy?
Yeah, I think I don't sure everybody would be, because I suspect a lot of your listeners have a very heavy allocation towards fixed income, and that, I think, would not be a great place to be under this scenario.
Well, let's follow that thread, okay? Because it's true we've got a bit of a sell-off in bonds today. Yield's still very low. We're going to have Todd Colvin?
Yep.
Thank you, from R.G. O'Brien and Associates. Great trader out on the floor, was going to put the bond market in perspective for us. But, you know, the Fed Reserve is still buying a ton of bonds, and they seem really loath to even start tapering off with, you know, inflation getting a bit lower. So that is still a backstop for bonds, and at the same time, it seems like one of those things that can keep the fuel going under stocks.
Yeah, well, I think, as I've described, fixed income as a relative performance trap. I don't expect to see a collapse in bond prices. I do think you're going to see yields move somewhat higher than they are today. I don't think it would be crazy to imagine an S&P at 1700 and a 10-year yield at 2, for instance. But what that creates is a massive relative performance gap. I mean, you're already 10 to 12% behind the S&P year to date in high quality fixed income. And one could imagine a scenario in which you could be 20% behind the S&P on a relative basis. And that kind of relative underperformance in fixed income, I don't think it feels much better than losing 10%. I mean, I think that's going to be a very, very painful place for people to be overweight. And we described last year fixed income as having reached the point of no return, meaning there simply was no return available to you. And you're beginning to see that effect in the sort of year-to-date relative performance.
Well, if you're looking for safety then, though, Michael, what do you do? Because you just, you know, mentioned that you don't think defensives have much room to move beyond where they are now. I mean, are you really going to tell somebody that's bent on having some element of safety in their portfolio to go into the cyclical stocks here?
I think that you are much better off having a portion of your wealth in economically sensitive equities and a lot of cash than what people have done, which is avoiding economically sensitive equities and having a lot of fixed income. You know, obviously, there's volatility in the equity market. Obviously, you could at any point in time have a 10 or 15% correction in the S&P. I mean, these things do happen. But fixed income gives you really a certainty of mediocre return with potential interest rate risk attached to it. And that's a bad place to be.
So let's talk about the cyclically sensitive areas that you are focusing on and seeing a potential for the market to you know, rotate toward now. Are you talking technology? Are you talking financials? And if so, more specifically, I don't know if you can give us names, but let's dig into that a bit, because may be people who are saying, yeah, maybe it's time to reallocate a bit.
Yeah, I mean, we won't give names, but I'll give sectors. You know, I think home building and construction materials, you know, this is an area which has really marked time for most of 2013 and is overdue another leg higher. I think the industrial sector can really do, you know, significantly better. The consumer sector has been strong. I think will continue to be strong. Little subsectors like media, which are already hot, I think we'll probably continue to be, we'll continue to be hot. I don't love the financials. You still have a sort of regulatory overhang, but, you know, I think that they would, you know, I think that they would do, you know, I think that they would do okay. But, you know, as I say, those are the sorts of places that we would concentrate on. And we think other developed markets will also do okay. I mean, Europe is performing somewhat better in recent weeks than it has been. I think everybody is, you know, somewhat, astonished at how strong Japan has been. But that's starting to look like it may be a really important secular turning point in that economy.
So, Michael, would you then sort of discount the forecasts that we're getting from many of the companies this earnings season? Because many of them have been, you know, downplaying.
Yes, because they read the same headlines in the Wall Street Journal that everybody else reads, and they adjust their forecasts accordingly. And, you know, the whole story of this cycle has been really pretty decent corporate earnings. I think we've had 15 consecutive beats in corporate earnings, with really mediocre guidance given each time.
But margins have been squeezed, and costs have been cut. It hasn't been organic growth or demand.
Well, I think that's been overstated. I mean, I think that there has been a lot of there's been a combination of top line growth and bottom line growth, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, I think corporations have really focused on getting costs under control, and I do think in the remainder of this cycle, I think they're going to be focused more on top line growth, and maybe margins, maybe margins will come down, but the bottom line number will still, will still be okay. That would be a fairly normal path for an economic cycle. And of course, a normal path for the bull market is for perhaps earnings growth to taper off in the latter part, but for price earnings multiples to really be extended. And there's plenty of room for PE multiple expansion in this market going forward.
Quick final question. You just gave us a tantalizing statement. You said it looks like we're really coming to a secular turn in the Japanese economy, the BOJ, of course, this massive stimulus. So are you saying perhaps that it's still time to get into Japanese stocks? Is that what you would advise people to do?
Yes. If the Japanese populace has really reached the point at which it feels it needs to do something different, and I think that's the message from QE. It's not its direct economic effect. It's more the fact that the population voted for it. That's an economy with tremendous latent industrial and economic power. And if they really start to focus on using that power creatively, in other words, trying to make money instead of stopping losing money, which has been the story of the last 22 years, that's a country which historically has had a tremendous ability to change what it does going forwards.
Michael Scholl, thank you so much. Chairman and CEO of Marketfield Asset Management. Join us Wednesday, May 8th, starting at 5 a.m. Bloomberg Radio, all day in Boston at South Station. All the hosts, all the guests, live. Vani Quinn and myself, Kathleen Hayes, next Wednesday, May 8th.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.